In spite of his bizarre explanation of Dr. Fritz, Arago was a tough, hard realist, which he combined with a paradoxical sensitivity. From what I learned in studying the case, he was far from being a saint, and at times unbelievably crude. For anyone brought up in a Puritan tradition, this was hard to justify in a man who had special powers, as Arago did. I watched him treat 200 people in less than 2 hours. He would take seconds to prescribe, and the diagnoses were immediate, without asking questions. I had to check all this personally. I had to study this man whom I would have to decide the fate of R.T.M. The results of his close observations over a period of time made Judge Imesi realize that the case simply could not be judged in conventional terms. He made it a point to keep his personal feelings from dominating his role as a judge, although he admitted to himself that this was hard to do. If it was within his power, he would have ordered Arago to undergo an intensive scientific study by a university, because he was now convinced that Arago was perhaps the wonder of the century. But this step was not within his realm under the Brazilian law. He would have to find other ways. Judge Imesi pored over the testimony day and night, in the hope that he could combine technical justice with justice of a higher order. He gave particular attention to the medical testimony of the doctors who certified, with before and after documentation, cures that Arago had achieved in the face of ominous prognoses from the conventional medical point of view. The judge took into account the advances made by parapsychology, as faltering as those steps were, in spite of recent recognition by the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He analyzed the attitude of the Catholic Church, noting that parapsychology was becoming acceptable to the Church RTMS tenets. He studied the works of Padre Oscar González Cado, a priest who was considered among the best parapsychologists in Latin America. The Padre had stated openly that Arago held the 164th highest rank among all the healers on the continent. He reviewed the tolerant and interested attitude of William James, Gardner Murphy, of the Meninger Foundation in Kansas, and others toward the unexplored potential of the human mind in the paranormal area. His thinking boiled down to this: Arago was doing a job that he was not entitled to do. He was practicing medicine, and he was not a doctor. But at the same time, he was definitely not a criminal as the harsh charge of witchcraft suggested. Arago RTMS crime, if that was the word for it, was not against the public, but against the structure of legal medicine. The public had not been harmed. There had been no witnesses to testify to that, even among the hundreds of thousands whom Arago had treated. Nor were there any among his most intense adversaries who claimed that he had harmed anyone. The public had not even been bilked, no one could testify Arago had charged a penny. There was no question but that he would have to condemn Arago, to send him back to jail, much as he hated to do it. If Judge Imesi did not condemn him, he would be a legal heretic, a position that no responsible judge could afford to hold. The law was brutally cut and dried, exacting and specific. Judge Imesi would have to follow it, regardless of his leanings. Yet being the first judge who had done comprehensive field research on Arago, Judge Barrows was said to have read the testimony in one day and then made his decision. Imesi felt that in the broadest possible sense, Arago was innocent. As a result, Judge Imesi went through what he called a procedural calisthenics ATM to try to reach the fairest possible answer to an unanswerable problem. Since there was no choice but to condemn Arago again, the judge sought ways to reduce the sentence and make it as light as possible. The first thing to consider was the public prosecutor ATMS charge of curanderismo. Imesi was convinced that this was unfair in the light of both Arago ATMS character and practice. Arago never used any ritual whatever, never practiced any of the mumbo-jumbo of primitive rites, said only simple prayers of the Con 165, Venchal Christian category, and these he said half to himself. The judge ATMS brief but intensive study of Arago at work had affected him strongly. It gave me another vision of life ATM, he said. A very subtly, it seems to validate the very essence of the Christian belief, a belief in life after death. If the existence of Dr. Fritz A, whether real or illusory A, were postulated as the root cause of Arago at EMS objective and verifiable miracles, I felt it did not conflict with the Christian ideal. In fact, it supported it. Arago was not working against the Christian ethic at EM. Judge Emissi recalled watching Arago perform an eye operation in which he extruded the eye visibly out of its socket with his kitchen knife leverage. Medically, this was impossible without pain. How could Arago do this? He recalled another operation during which he stood directly next to the patient. The incision started to bleed profusely. Arago put his finger directly on the wound and said, "A, Jesus does not want this to bleed at EM." The bleeding stopped. It was so unbelievable that the judge and the district attorney had to confirm it with each other. Emissi searched the archives of Brazilian law on the subject of witchcraft. He turned to a favorite jurist of his, a former judge named Nelson Hungria, who was known as the A Prince of Penal Jurists at EM in Brazil. It was Hungria who, in a famous decision, had determined that to reach a finding of witchcraft, the defendant must be found guilty of not only prescribing herbs and roots, but of personally concocting and dispensing them to the patient. Arago, of course, was not doing this, with his use of modern pharmaceuticals. This might be malpractice, but it certainly wasn't EMT witchcraft. Because of this, Emissi found that he could, with full legal justification, shift the charge from a crime against the public to a crime against the public administration, bearing a far lighter sentence. Further, the evidence showed clearly that Arago had never harmed anyone, and the Brazilian Penal Code stated that there cannot be a crime without harm, injury, or damage. The only party, therefore, who could claim to be injured was again the public administration, specifically the office that grants licenses to doctors for the practice of 166, medicine. This too would shift the case from a crime against the public to a charge of contravention, with an appropriate reduction in the severity of the sentence. The main thrust of the judge at EMS thinking was that the only thing harmed was the medical profession. When Judge Emissi sat down to write his opinion, he felt deep sorrow that he would have to return Arago to jail. I have to admit at EM, he said, that I felt just a little like a judge who handled a case about 2,000 years ago, and I didn't EMT like it at all. I had spent hours, days, and weeks trying to find a way I could free this enigmatic man, who should have been placed in a university for serious study. I was doing the best I could for Arago, I knew that. It was tragic to separate him from his family again, to see him go back in that jail at EM. The only bright spot was that Emissi was able to reduce the sentence to only 2 months more of incarceration, whereas Arago would have been facing 9 more months under the witchcraft charge. The judge signed the papers with great reluctance. On August 20, 1965, Arago drove himself to Lafayette, entered his waiting cell, and began more months of prison life. Meanwhile, the Federal Supreme Court continued to review the case, on Judge Emissi at EMS urging. There had been many irregularities in the prosecution, many oversights. In a strange about-face, prosecutor D.A. Paula recommended that the sentence be cancelled. The court finally voted unanimously that the charges against Arago should be dropped. He was freed from prison on November 8, 1965. The rejoicing was again overwhelming. The warden and the guards embraced him. Many of his fellow prisoners cried. Several thousand gathered outside his cell to greet him on his release. Arlette was waiting for him, with all the boys. Arago was crying openly. He waved to the caravan of cars that had come to greet him on the Rio Belo Horizonte Road. Newsmen at EMS flashbulbs were popping like fireworks. He arrived home, went to the refrigerator, took out a piece of meat, and called his dog Tostão over to his favorite chair. He was home again, this time without the immediate threat of a new jailing. 167, where the future would lead was uncertain. By the next morning, they were lining up outside the Spirit Center again, as if nothing had happened over the past year. Rising early, Arago went out the door, walked down the cobblestones in his muddy shoes, and into the clinic. He went into his small inner room for meditation, then came out again, his deep eyes glazed and his voice thick with a German accent. Arago was back, and the hopes of thousands of sick were rising. How long it would last was anybody a TMS guess. 168. 9. With Arago released, Dr. Pugh Harrich and his group of American scientists renewed their efforts for the research expedition to Brazil. They would still have to move cautiously to avoid drawing inordinate attention to Arago at TMS fresh start at his practice. Several preliminary probes were made by Pugh Harrich, including continual contact with many Brazilian physicians who were sympathetic to Arago and wanted the extra support of North American research. On learning that former President Juscelino Kubitschek was living in New York, out of favor with Brazil ATMS new regime of President Castelo Branco, Dr. Pugh Harrich and Maria Treen, an interpreter, visited him at his office on East 57th Street, in Manhattan. They were interested in any authoritative information he could give them. Kubitschek greeted them cordially, and confirmed his friendship and experiences with Arago. He told them that he would never have pardoned Arago if he had not had first-hand knowledge of his healing powers or if he had had any information that Arago had ever harmed anyone. He felt that a full-scale medical research program on Arago was not only desirable, but urgent. Encouraged by this verification from a Brazilian who was both a doctor and a statesman, the Medical Commission on Arago, as the group within Acenta Research Associates was named, contacted several Brazilian doctors as to the best method of approach and the timing of the expedition. The Brazilian doctors suggested holding off until they had explored the conditions of Arago at TMS work, now that he had been freed from his legal troubles. By July 1966, some 8 months after Arago had been released from jail, the doctors in Brazil advised that Arago was back at his usual routine and that he would do everything possible to cooperate with the American researchers. Arago had suggested, however, that Pugh Harrich come alone for a preliminary survey, as inconspicuously as possible, to avoid arousing the hostility of the medical society. 169. Pugh Harrich arrived in Congonhas do Campo during the first week in August, 1966. With him was his research assistant, Solveig Clark, a fair, tall, slender, and efficient American woman of Norwegian extraction. The immediate job at hand was to quietly explore just one factor of Arago at TMS skill, his ability to diagnose disease. This study would attract the least attention on the part of the anti-Arago faction of the medical society, and provide essential groundwork for the fully equipped scientific team that was to arrive later. It was the first visit to Brazil for Solveig Clark, and she was captivated by the charm of Congonhas. She sat with Pugh Harrich in the small Café Tilde Copyright at lunchtime, waiting for Arago at TMS inevitable appearance on the Rue Amaréchal Floriano, on his way to the clinic. "You can sit here, TM," Pugh Harrich told her, "and let the town come to you, TM." But from her view of the street outside Arago at TMS clinic, it looked as if the world were coming to Congonhas. Several chartered buses were parked down the street from the clinic. The people were waiting patiently on the sidewalk, ignoring the hot sun, wearing a motley variety of clothes, from elegant to tattered, and at times looking anxiously around the corner for Arago to appear. It wasn't a TMT long before a battered truck swung around the corner and into the carport of the Hotel Freitas. It narrowly missed a post as it screeched to a halt. A powerful, thick-set figure jumped out, who Solveig knew immediately was Arago. Buoyantly, he bounced across the street towards the Café Tilde Copyright. He was wearing his usual sport shirt, collar open, and a dusty pair of slacks. He looked as if he were on the opposite end of the spectrum from a mystic. Solveig was most impressed with his eyes, however. They were warm and deep, and seemed to have great command. He shouted aloud hello to Pugh Harrich, then embraced him warmly. Together, Arago and the two visitors crossed the street and went into the clinic. Within moments, Arago was at work. By the next morning, Solveig and Pugh Harrich were ready to begin their study on Arago at TMS method of diagnosis. They found a young Peace Corps girl who was willing to in 170, interpret for them, although she later became so awed by watching Arrigo at work that she would often forget to translate. Solvay Eager TMS organizational ability was legend, and she immediately put it to work. The plan that was worked out was simple. Arrigo agreed to give an immediate verbal diagnosis for each patient, as he stepped up. He would ask no questions of the patient at all. Arrigo a TMS diagnosis would be tape recorded. Solvay Eager would then interview the patient to find out if he had brought medical records from his own physician. This diagnosis would be matched against Arrigo at DMS. If there was a difference of opinion between the two, the diagnosis of the physician would be accepted over Arrigo at DMS. This admitted bias was used only because it was impossible to re-examine the patient. Puharich and Solveig worked 3 full days beside Arrigo. They took the first 1,000 patients as a sample base for the preliminary study. It was recognized that this would not be a definitive study, but the results would be invaluable in assessing the potential for success of the full research team. After the 3rd day, Puharich and Solvay went over the records and summarized the results. They were impressive. Preliminary study, diagnostic capacity of Jose Tilda copyright Arrigo, Congonhas do Campo, Brazil, August 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 1966. Cases diagnosed by Arrigo, 1,000. Cases rejected by Arrigo, ordered back to own physician 35. Final sample base, cases, 965. Number of patients with medical records out of above 545. Cases rejected due to lack of medical records 420. Sample total, 965. Correct match between Arrigo a TMS diagnosis and physician a TMS 518. Disagreement between Arrigo a TMS diagnosis and physician a TMS 27. Valid sample, 545. Percentage of diagnoses made by Arrigo that matched diagnoses of physicians, 96%. 171. Beyond the diagnoses, the unorthodox pharmacology continued to defy rational analysis, yet a follow-up on several cases showed measurable success. One example was a 42-year-old American woman, the wife of a successful lawyer, who had been plagued for most of her life with various allergies that were believed to trigger severe migraine-like headaches. After consulting specialists in both the United States and Europe, the couple flew to Brazil in desperation to see Arrigo. The course of drugs prescribed was, as usual, medically irrational. It included an obsolete form of streptomycin known as garomycina, the rarely used German drug olobinitin, supposed to increase biological defense mechanisms, a Brazilian anti-allergy drug known as Pyrovac, an enzyme preparation called Pancron, an antacid, alkalitrat, and massive dose of vitamin B12. Puharich was later able to follow up on the case back in the United States. There were no adverse reactions from the drugs, although this would seem highly likely in the quantities prescribed, which were large. The course was continued for over 2 months, during which time the migraine headaches subsided for the first time in over 20 years. Mild attacks would occur at rare instances after that, but were insignificant compared to the former intensity of the attacks. Within 6 months, the attacks had completely disappeared. Puharich summarized in his report, "It is reasonable to conclude that Arrigo has paranormal medical diagnostic talent to TM. Admittedly, over 95% was an outstanding accomplishment, but it still fails to explain how or why Arrigo was able to do all this." Further, it was obvious that when the American team arrived, they would want to add their own diagnosis to this record where possible, in order to establish further verification. In the course of his routine, Arrigo treated several ophthalmic cases. Puharich, along with everyone who saw it, could never get used to this part of Arrigo TMS technique. Regardless of how many times he watched Arrigo plunge the knife up into the sinus cavity or behind the eyeball, he could not conceive how a conscious patient could stand the pain or overcome the fear. The cases where Arrigo would leave the 172 knife sticking out of the eye while he turned to pick up some cotton or another instrument were particularly graphic. the patient Puharich had seen on his previous trip, who had brushed away a fly from his cheek while his eye was extruded from the socket, had remained in his mind all during the time he was back in the States. When Puharich was least expecting it, Arago turned to him while he was stirring a knife blade in a patient at TMSI and said, "Every good American doctor should be able to do the same thing at TM." He was continuing to manipulate the blade mercilessly. "A here TM," he said to Puharich, "a take hold of the knife self at TM." Before Puharich was hardly aware of it, Arago had grabbed his hand roughly and squeezed it round the knife handle. Puharich felt weak and faint. He took his hand away. Arago pressed it back on the knife handle again, this time forcing Puharich to shove the knife into the limit. Puharich was horrified. But he noticed one thing: there seemed to be some kind of repellent force that inexplicably worked for Arago but for no one else when it came to this maneuver except when Arago guided his hand. At dinner at Arago at TMS house, they found him relaxed and voluble. The change from the stem and brusque manner at the clinic was marked. Arago joked with Arlette, played with his cats, rough-housed with his sons. It was hard to believe he was the same person they had been studying clinically all day. Puharich was determined to find out how Arago was able to give his diagnoses in modern medical terminology. Even though Arago had stated the condition of the patients in Portuguese, the tapes were easily translatable into articulate medical terms. Dr. Moura Godoy had been on hand to help in this regard, and continued to help at dinner. "A how are you able to know modern medical terminology in such detail if you haven't a TMT studied it?" ATM Puharich asked. Through Dr. Godoy's interpreter, Arago laughed and replied, "A that a TMS the easiest thing to do. I just listen to what the voice tells me, and I repeat it RTM." "A what voice are you talking about?" ATM Puharich assumed that the answer would be the alleged Dr. Fritz. But he 173, wanted to hear Arago TMS own response. "A it RTMS the voice of Dr. Fritz at TM," Arago confirmed. "A I always hear it in my left ear. If the people in the room are making too much noise, I can't TMT hear the voice. So I shut them up at TM." "A does the voice speak to you in German or Portuguese?" ATM, Puharich asked. "A I always hear it as Portuguese TM," Arago said. "A I don't yet TMT know German. If someone who is curious wants to talk in German to Dr. Fritz, I simply mimic what Dr. Fritz is saying to me. But I don't yet TMT understand what I am saying at TM. A do you understand the medical words?" ATM Puharich asked. "A no at TM," Arago said. "A I just repeat what I hear at TM." At the end of the conversation, uneasily grasped explanation was as far away as ever. There was only one pragmatic thing to go on. That was to analyze the massive statistical evidence of accurate medical diagnoses. This much could be checked, although it still left many tantalizing questions. On their long, 11-hour flight back to New York from Rio, a one of Panama TMS longest legs, A. Puharich had plenty of time to mull over the visit. He had studied German for 6 years in high school and at Northwestern, and although he was extremely rusty in the language, he was not too impressed with the few phrases that Arago threw out from time to time during his work. Others, however, who had made it a point to check Arago's TMS capacity in the language, found that his use of it was more than acceptable. Arago had seemed bored when Puharich pressed him about the language syndrome. Puharich didn't a TMT follow-up at the time, because the main basic questions were, could Arago diagnose accurately without even examining the patient? Could he actually heal? Everything else was peripheral. The whole question of the possibility of a deceased personality possessing the motor sensory equipment of a living being was almost totally unexplored in modern psychology. Parapsychologists had done intensive study on mediums, with some evidence A but not proof A that pointed to the legitimacy of certain mediums as channels 174, for communication with discarnate personalities. But the research was spotty and difficult to carry out in the laboratory. It could not, however, be totally ignored, especially in a case such as Arago or TMS, which defied any conventional explanation. Whether new explorations into the area, attempting to forge some of the instinctual prowess of primitive medicine men with the discipline of modern science, would shed more light on the matter was unpredictable. On the other hand, before Freud there had been no such concepts as the id and superego except in ancient mythology. Was Arago a symbolic expression of bypassed ancient law? In Brazil, the possibility of possession, for better or for worse, is taken almost as a matter of course in all levels of society. The Brazilians have a tendency to accept such a potential phenomenon as part of the culture, and therefore it becomes in their eyes either a literal or metaphoric truth. Puharic reasoned that the human mind is built like a filter. It is constantly focusing on certain subjects, constantly filtering out others. It has to do this or, like a computer, it would be overcome with random information bits of no cohesive value. In Brazil, where many minds permit the concept of possession to filter through, it is therefore culturally acceptable at least to consider such a phenomenon as a viable postulate. A reflection of the easy acceptance of this idea is shown in a routine Brazilian school English examination labeled, A Proficiency 1 Comprehension and Composition at TM, which reprints an article by John Francis Phipps that appeared in the British publication, The New Statesman. The article concerns a healer in Brazil and a festival in his honor. It begins, I sometimes bizarre things happen to be true, and are therefore worth investigating. ATM, the questions at the end of the examination reflect the atmosphere in which the student is brought up. They include, A. Do you believe these cures took place? ATM, A. What is your explanation for them? ATM, A. Are modern medicine and this kind of healingness is sorely in conflict? ATM, 175, A. What is this A metaphysical cocktail of the right dimensions? ATM, A. Describe experiences you know about Umbanda TM. Are the writer mentions that socially and racially, the human friendliness and equality were taken for granted. Is this typical of Brazil? ATM, young Brazilian minds, like those of their elders, are more conditioned to accept this sort of possibility than an American or a European would. But in Arago TM's case, this cultural difference mattered little. His material accomplishments were fully obvious and observable to either foreign or domestic minds. Anyone studying him could only go so far in rational judgment. When the full medical expedition came down to Brazil, it would be important to focus only on those verifiable facets of Arago: the diagnostic ability, the successful treatment of incurable diseases by unconventional pharmacology, the ability to perform surgery without anesthesia, antisepsis, or hemostasis are the tying off of blood vessels. These objectives alone created a formidable challenge. Back in New York, the elaborate plans for the expedition finally began to gel. There would be 6 medical members of the commission heading up the research. These would include William Brewster, M.D., senior research scientist at the New York University School of Medicine, Luis Cortes, assistant research scientist at the same school, Walter Punk, M.D., chief research psychiatrist at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center, Robert S. Shaw, M.D., associate visiting surgeon, Massachusetts General Hospital, and Henry Puharich, M.D., who currently was heading up medical research for the Intellectron Corporation of New York City, the medical instrument developer and manufacturer. None of the commission members would be making the journey in an official capacity for the organization he worked with. The immediate goal would be the scientific rationalization of the phenomena of Arago as they were directly observed by the group. Since the preliminary investigations had firmly indicated that there was validity to the claims 176, made for Arago TMS work, it would be up to the team to try to confirm this objectively by instrument and examination. If the biophysical investigation accomplished this, an important vacuum in modern medical knowledge could be filled. Paramount in the plans was the study of those aspects to Arago TMS work which could be explained and related to accepted modern medical theory and practice. These aspects would be clearly separated from those of Arago TMS work which could not be explained by any known theory or practice in modern medicine. The obscure and more occult phase would have to have special attention, but since it was in unknown waters, it would not have priority.